I've been asked to kick off with a couple of questions, and so my first question, not sure who to ask this to, but I'll throw it to the panel. How do we address the cycle of inquiries with limited actual policy response? If a policy response, is a policy response really required? Chris, you're the head of domestic markets for the RBA. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting, well, there's a tension because in some ways what we're seeing is that commoditisation of banking. So you need to get your costs down, so you, it's very much a cookie cutter type approach. And if you've got regular collateral, that's fine. It works. I'm sort of a bit surprised that we haven't actually seen the more brokers come into that space to say, OK, there's a gap between, you know, the, might call them the new innovators and what they can, the information that they can provide, and the banks who actually want to lend money, you know, on good risks. So, so one response is, look, what you should see is actually a competitive response that someone actually tries to fill that gap, whether it be a broker or accountants and the like. But then there's also a bigger issue, which is, and it comes back to Scott's point, and it sort of relates to commoditisation, which is how do you fund the new innovators? There's a whole bunch of people who've made a lot of money through an appreciation in house prices, and that's great, very good security for banks. But then you've got a whole, the new innovators are going to be, or tend to be much younger. You know, we had a, we've got a business panel, it was a guy from GoGet. I'm sure he won't mind me mentioning this, but he said, look, he runs an operation here. He's got all these young people who are manning the phones and that. He says they will never actually be able to, you know, the innovators among them will never, will find it hard to go to a bank and actually borrow some money because it's too expensive for them to invest in the housing market. So he sort of posed that question, how are we actually going to fund the innovators who actually don't have a mortgage? And part of the, you have to take a fairly bigger picture view here, which I think what that actually means is there needs to somehow be an intergenerational transfer from those people who've benefited, so the older ones, to the younger innovators. And then you actually start stepping back into the world of superannuation because that's actually where the assets of the older people are held. So how do you actually get the super funds to actually fund some of the riskier investments. So I think you actually, it's a lot bigger than just the SME sector. It actually involves a lot of the institutional arrangements. And then the other thing I would, in terms of inquiries and all of that, the sense that we get when we talk to businesses, you know, in some ways a small business, they're not really actually out for a handout here. They actually want government, in some ways, to get out of the way so that they can actually do what they want to do. And from the bank's point of view, that's actually, that sort of makes sense because the way we're necessarily looking at aggregates and that, but what we think is a really good thing for an economy to be is actually flexible so that as the price signals change, so the exchange rate goes up, environment for the exporters and the import competitors, the resources in the economy can move fairly seamlessly from that sort of area to another area. Yeah. Oh, I'd like to find someone from APRA actually to talk about that, but I guess it was interesting with the David Murray's financial system inquiry because he actually said, look, basically, the capital requirements are not affecting the supply of lending or the relative price beyond the inherent riskiness of a loan. So if you look at...
he said we've actually had no evidence to prove that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. But this was a perfect opportunity if someone was going to present that. And the thing... I'm going to sound like an apologist for a bank here, but in some ways, if you look at non-performing loans to households, you know, buyer mortgages and that, currently it's about 0.7% of total loans. During the GFC, that just got up to just under 1%. If you look at non-performing loans of unincorporated businesses, it's currently 1.4%. During the GFC, that got up to 3.7%. So it is true that those loans are actually a lot riskier. And so one, the probability of default is actually higher in a small business. And it sort of makes sense. Cash flows are uncertain and the like. And the other thing is that the loss given default is also higher. So the losses associated with a small business loan that's secured by a residential mortgage, I think on average it's about 30%. The losses associated with a residential mortgage are actually 20%.
Chris, if I can ask you a question, just to bring the sort of conversation back to what are the new opportunities for SME finance. From the Reserve Bank's point of view, if you were to provide a recommendation to federal government about what opportunities you would or what the Reserve Bank would want to look at, what would those opportunities be?
In some ways we'd be quite reluctant to point to a specific thing, and in some ways that reflects our mandate, to be honest. We've got a very blunt instrument here, which is the level of interest rates. But why we actually are really interested in this area is because there's such a small and medium-sized enterprises are such an important part of the transmission mechanism from the interest rate setting through to broader economic activity. You know, we all know the statistics account for just under half the employment in the economy, a third of value added. And the thing for me that's been so enlightening, engaging with Scott and Michael and all of these, is actually understanding that you can't really think of all of the SME sector like you think about large corporations. You know, they have this very big administrative managerial function, so they've outsourced that to a group within an organisation. SMEs, it's all a mixture of a household and a business decision. And then within that, you've probably got these groups which some are really want to grow, some are actually, I think it's a very large share, actually don't have employees, so they're your tradies and the like. And then others who actually only want to stay at a certain point, and that might reflect because payroll tax cuts in. So it's a really diverse sort of sector, and we actually need to understand how they respond to interest rate signals and the like. And what one of the ways we do it, it's only a small thing, is we run a small business panel. It's been running for 21 years or so. And to be honest, it's the most refreshing meeting I ever attend each year, and the governor comes along and all of that. And it's actually small business people. There's a bit of a bias in the selection in as much as they tend to be winners of Telstra Business Awards and the like. But just listen to them. You know, it's about... we've had Seek, the guys from Seek, when they were a small business, you know, we had Go-Get, you know. But it's just refreshing. They just want to do what they do. Finance comes up, because, I mean, one of the other reasons that we actually convened this group was we talk to banks a lot, and so you'll get a sort of a message from them, but we actually wanted to hear from the people who are actually looking for finance and the like. And as I said earlier, it was a Go-Get guy who said, I think we've got a bit of an issue here in terms of funding the young innovators, and we've got a system that's very much focused on mortgages. So that's fine right now, but if you look ahead, is that actually going to sustain that financing of innovation, which has then made us look, well, what do other countries actually do? And that's why it was interesting, I think, Germany, for example, seems to be able to fund the middle-sized enterprises very effectively, and I think it does go to equity and the like.
Thank you.
Sorry, I've got a question down the back here.
Yeah, Scott, I've got observation from your finding. You said that more than 50% application rejected. It's a big number. If I think as a banker, I'm not a banker. Out of that 50%, even other 50% eligible, and somehow they did not know how to prepare the application, or they didn't put the documents properly, there's a big loss. I mean, these people cannot grow, one, they cannot borrow, or they knock the doors of private lenders and they pay high cost over there. So there's a great loss to the economy as such. Don't you think, Chris, I mean, RBA has to have a kind of a special desk or a special arm, basically, to look after the innovators from financing point of view? Which most of the emerging countries do have a dedicated boards or dedicated wings, basically, coming through central banks, which look after the needs of these SMEs. There's a need to educate these people. I mean, we as an academic happy to do that, but there is there's a big cost to it of people not getting loans. But even banks are sitting with heaps of cash. It's not that they should give a freebies, but
they
there is
them.
An issue.
You're right. Yeah.
Chris?
In some ways, which is the challenge, I think, with Scott's idea about innovation, is how do you actually pick the innovators? It's not clear to me how you do that. And if you're going to pick winners, in some ways, we're talking about a subsidy here, and that's actually better done through the fiscal side of things, not through some hidden central bank cheap funding. I mean, you want transparency, you want accountability. If you're going to move resources, effectively the fiscal resources of the government.
So tax incentives.
Yeah, so all of that stuff should be done through the fiscal accounts, not through some backdoor way of using the central bank, to be honest.
Jacob, a question for Chris. Should we encourage or allow foreign venture capitalists to enter the Australian market and provide funding to the new innovator or the startup company?
Capital flows very freely into Australia. There, as I understand it, there aren't actually restrictions. Well, as best I can tell.